So it's great to have Clifford back in Santa Barbara once again. And he will be speaking today with the title of The Enhancement and the Consistency of Excision.
Okay, so my collaborators authorized me to use this title, which is going to be the title of a forthcoming preprint, hopefully. So it'll be, you know, and my collaborators are, have I got that right? Yes. My collaborators are Rob Myers, Amanda Pete, and Simon Ross, who's here. And so I guess my first question is, what's the traditional length of the Thursday talks now? No, it just depends upon how I can keep it to an hour, but the Enhanson, is now so old that I should probably review a little bit of that.
The really hard limit is cookies.
Cookies is what, three?
Yeah.
Okay, I can finish the introduction by then. Okay, so what I'd like to do is to tell you a little bit about some of the games we've been playing. The embarrassing thing is that the bulk of the essential idea and the essential computation was done back in Aspen last year, and we never actually got around to finishing it up, given that some of us were doing various other things. So we decided to get it finished, given that at least two of us were in the same place and not too busy. So let's see. So what I should do is remind you of the Enhancement story. And I don't remember what paper, what the number of the paper was, but it was the work with Joe and Amanda in 99. So the key thing then is that, there were various goals. One of the goals was to understand gravity duals of n equals 2 theories. By n equals 2, I mean 8 superchargers, gauge theories at large n. And that's not really going to be the focus of what I'm talking about today. So the other focus is that it's an interesting mechanism for removing a certain class of time-like singularities. Okay, and we made a proposal there for what replaces the mechanism for how things are removed and what replaces them. And so what I'd like to do is show you that that's consistent with many things from many different points of view. And it's an interesting exercise. So we're sort of going to be playing doctors and nurses today, in that we're going to be working with a particular patient, deciding where to make an incision, and then excising the infected area and replacing it with something.
I have to ask now, is it contagious?
I hope so. At least, if not the sickness, at least the cure. Good. So let me remind you then of what we did with Joe and Amanda. And the important point here is that much of what I'm going to say works for any rat big brain in terms of the aspects I want to get at because of how the D-brain charges work. So I'm going to focus on wrapping six brains. But if you have a favorite other type of brain you wish to wrap, feel free to just recompute the numbers. But most of the essential phenomena come from ratios, mu p plus 4, mu p, which is universal, so it won't matter. Okay. So one of the points then was to wrap n d6 brains on k3. Okay, so this leaves us with some six-dimensional theory in which we have a membrane-like object. And generically, there's a bunch of U1s coming from the K3 plus membrane-like object. Okay, and chalk is disintegrating. I'm going to use one of these. So the essential thing then is that the membrane-like object is interesting because it seems to be a wrapped 6 brain, but in fact also has some admixture of negative D2 brain charge. So it looks like wrapped D6 with minus D2 brain charge. And so in getting this in studying this membrane-like thing moving in 6 dimensions, we'd like to write down, if we were trying to get large n gauge theory, for example, we'd like to write down the supergravity solution and perhaps conjecture some duality, etc. So the first thing you notice is that this negative D2 brain charge produces singularity. So first of all, where does this come from? This comes from the fact that in addition to your familiar couplings on the D brain wall volume, there's also a coupling of this form. And so in fact, integrating over the K3 times the rest of the world volume will produce some coupling to D2 brain charge. And the key point is that relative to the more familiar instanton term, this one comes with a minus sign. If I got everything right, I would also put in the appropriate numbers here, which would tell you that it is precisely minus 1 units of D2 brain charge for every single wrapped D6 brain. Okay, so you write down the supergravity solution, string frame. Okay, and it looks much like what you'd expect. It looks like a D6 brain wrapped on K3 with some delocalized D2 brain mixed in. But there's a sign. So let me put the D6 brain in the 0, 1, 2 directions, also along the K3. I don't need to know the metric of K3. Let me call those directions 6, 7, 8, 9. And then there's a plus a half. The transverse directions, 3. So I'm writing these out once and for all, and then I'll abbreviate it later on. So that's the solution. And then the key point is that I'll write the other fields in a moment. Z6 is 1 plus something I'll call R6 over R. Z2 is 1 minus something I will call R2 over R. R2 is V star times R6 over V. I'll tell you what V star is in a second. R6 is G string N alpha prime to the half over 2, and B star is 2 pi square root of alpha prime to the 4. So the characteristic stringy volume of the K3. Okay, so this sign plays a crucial role. It's told to us that we know it has to be there because of this. And you can see that there's a singularity. The singularity is of what's called repulsion type. And that is at R equals R2. And as you can see, various things happen. The metric essentially collapses. Most crucially, you can see that the volume of K3, which runs from the asymptotic V that you put the system on, so you put the system on K3 of volume V as measured at infinity, as you come to the core of the solution, that decreases, so V of K3 is in fact V times Z2 over Z6, and you can see that as Z2 goes to zero, the volume of K3 goes to zero. Okay? So the picture you have in mind, or should have in mind, is that the supergravity solution, happily, another reason why it's nice to wrap six brains is because you can draw everything quite nicely.
R is in the...
I'm about to tell you what R is. So there's my 3, 4, 5 directions. Those are the directions transverse to everybody, transverse to the membrane. And so R, so trade in x3, x4, x5 for I, R, and some polars. Okay, and then there's a radius at which there is a sphere, which K3 vanishes, there's a singularity. I'll say more about that singularity in a moment. It's called the repulsion, showed up in various situations before. Kalosh and Lind and Berndt found it. I need more white chalk. Excuse me?
What is the value of the Delafton?
Let me write in the other fields, because we should say something about them. So, can everyone see down here? Okay, so e to the 2 phi is that. So, it's some random number. 7. Yes?
3 halves.
Sorry? 3 halves. 3 halves, thank you. Yeah. Oh, you mean at the repulsion? Well, Z2 goes to 0. Yeah, sorry, I misunderstood your question. Yeah. Is that what you're asking?
I want to see this formula.
What formula? Oh, you just wanted to see this? There it is. Okay. And of course, C3 is, of course, the usual thing, DT wedge, the bits where the D2 bits are, and C7 right. Okay. So those are all the fields, that's the full solution. Okay. So this is all old stuff, and of course you know, as string theorists, that something interesting happened long before VK3 got to zero, because VK3 goes to V star, I should get an enhanced gauge symmetry, there are extra fields in the theory, and poor supergravity doesn't know about those fields, and so it fails to capture all of the interesting phenomena for small r.
So in type 2, why do you get an extra gauge symmetry when V is V star?
Yeah.
That's
a question. Why?
It's a question. Why in type 2 do you, in
hadronic? Because, well, if you just count up all the different, so there are 24 U1s, all of which have every right to get enhanced, and one of them comes from the volume of K3.
You have a conservative enhanced gauge symmetry?
Yeah. Right. Right. I guess I don't think of that as non-perturbative. They're wrapped D4 brains, which will become massless.
So the conformal field theory breaks down at this point.
Who's conformal field theory?
The type 2.
Yeah, just like conformal field theory breaks down.
Right. Right, the rat brain's becoming mathless, the usual story.
Wait, remind
me. Why does it become mathless?
For the same reason, I will write formally, which will remind you of this shortly. The point is that for the same reason, for the same reason that the D6 has an induced D2, right, modifying the tension. So the tension you would get would be tau 6 times the volume, and then there's an additional piece induced by the wrapping. Okay, but so let me just let me just factor out this and write this as V minus V star, because the ratio of the tension, the ratio of the tensions is in fact V star, and this will also happen for the four brains.
So this is for a particular body of beta
angles, right? Yes. Right.
Try to take an orbifold case.
Sure. Right. 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 Okay? So this is what I was telling you before. All rat brains will know about this because the ratio of the charge is universal.
All of the angles are don't be fields, right? It's purely geometric. There are no fields at all.
Right. You mean they're
yeah.
there, but they're narrow.
Yeah.
So K3, no.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so excuse me. Yes, but I've switched on no B field, so I'm just looking at the cycle getting to this particular special, purely geometrical, as Joe was saying. Okay, so continuing the review, you can see some of this phenomena. Some of these phenomena more clearly by proving the geometry. After all, we're supposed to believe that this is made of n BPS objects wrapped on K3, and if it is, then we should be able to build it by bringing in one of them from infinity and trying to bring it in. And so the actual way of doing that, honestly, is to do a probe computation.
At the same point where you get an enhanced gauge symmetry, this membrane tension also goes to zero.
Oh, about to do that. Yes.
Right.
Okay, so one wrapped D6 brain. Let's probe with that, because this is made of a whole bunch of them, right? And so we're trying to bring one in from infinity and bring it up to this geometry which we found in the interior, and the point is that we fail. That's the punchline. So let me remind you of the probe computation, just roughly. Well, we just write the effective action on the probe, on the membrane probe. And that is, well, it has the usual bits. So the effective tension, as I wrote before, is, write this schematically as okay. And so if you were to go through and do this computation, do a slow probe computation, let me not do that for you, because it's very straightforward. I guess I should define GAB to be the induced metric, phi is phi. Okay. and I'm not worrying about the other fields for now. If you went and did this, you'd be able to deduce the metric on the moduli space of this probe and thus see what it sees. So the result, now what do I want to keep? Okay. The result is, well, of course, we have 8 supercharges, we don't expect a non-trivial potential, and it all cancels nicely. Basically, working in static gauge, declaring all my derivatives with respect to time of the transverse coordinates 3, 4, and 5 to be simply velocities, I can expand everything in velocities. The leading term will just cancel. Tension will cancel against charge because it's BPS. The next term, the V squared term, will give me the non-trivial metric. And it looks, so the kinetic energy looks like 1/2 G string.
DC7 is the Hodge dual of
DC3
in the metric.
DC7 is the Hodge dual of...
Talking about the Ramon-Ramon potential.
Over here?
DC7, yeah. So the field strength of D7 is the Hodge dual of the field strength of
D7. No, these are independent. These are independent.
How do you get
C7? C7 is just the fact... A six brain. If I just wiped out the Z2 parts, it's just the solution for a six brain. Okay. If I wiped out the six brain part, it's just a solution for the seven brain, two brain. Thank you. And this is sort of the form you get. I think was it Saitlin who showed that this form will always work, the harmonic function symbol stuff. It's a nice form. You can guess how to get these sort of delocalized brains within brains metrics that way. That's how the solution works.
So I'm a little confused. So the total Ramon-Ramon field strength does not satisfy Hodge dual?
Why should it? I don't understand.
Two brain is not dual to six brains.
No, those are the potentials, not
zero brain.
Yeah.
I know those are the potentials, and I'm asking about the field strength. And
okay.
You're saying they're not. It's just a question. So
yeah,
if I take the total Ramon-Ramon field strength, a 4-point piece and an 8-point piece.
Good.
And it's not self-dual.
Right. There is some. Good.
The term integral of C7, that's from the D6 brain?
Yes. This is a Z6 brain, but this is...
That's necessary for what reason?
Right, because this really is the full 6 brain probe which I've reduced. And I'm saying I've... okay, so I guess you should also be, in that spirit, confused by this term. And what I've done is I've said, well, it all has come from the full 6 brain action. I've integrated out the K3 in this part, getting the induced mu2 charge. And in fact, there's also curvature couplings in Born-Imfeld, which would induce this in the tension.
Okay.
Good. Yes, this of course does correspond to some magnetic D0 charge, which would couple to the D2 by field strengths on the world volume, ordinary. But let's not worry about that. Okay. So again, we can see then that this, if I just pull out an overall factor of mu6 z6, is in fact, no, it's not. That's a mu2. Good. So the point is that the probe, as Jacques anticipated, the probe will become massless at the place where V becomes V star. And if you plug in where that happens, at what radius that happens, you will see that it happens at a radius larger than than the repulsion radius. And so we've argued by contradiction, if you like, that this interior part of the geometry is simply an artifact of supergravity's inability to anticipate that there will be stringy fields appearing when the K3 gets small enough. So this was christened the enhancer, as you know, because it's a phenomenon occurring at a point of enhanced gauge symmetry, but that's not really necessary. The important thing is that, again, we see extended objects are becoming massless, introducing new phenomena. We have to repair our understanding in that light.
I'm sure that you have looked into all that, but are there no other things that become massless earlier than that?
Like what?
Tensionless. Well, I don't know. I'm just speculating, but if there are small cycling K3 to begin with.
Well, I think I am free to freeze anything I want and let the K3 flow in just having that cycle shrink. In other situations, I can let every cycle shrink, and then other things will happen.
The K3 is uniformly shrunk to small size. I'm sure that there is none, but I'm just asking.
I mean, this is codimension 1 in the moduli space, complex codimension 1 in the moduli space of K3. Is there other degenerations?
I asked at the beginning of course that this is a general shape of K3.
Well, I'm not sure I can say anything general. I think we have to go on a very case by case.
But what I'm saying is that suppose you have a cycle of fixed size to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Other than the volume.
Well, K3 has 120 something, two cycles.
Good.
And then that have each of them has fixed size, and then they uniformly shrunk to small size, right? And then I'm just asking, because I couldn't think about it while I'm listening, but I'm just wondering whether you have thought about all the possibility where these conspires with background Raman charge becomes masses earlier than this radius.
I think what I said is all I can say, which is that.
If there is such a thing, then this picture might be modified, right?
That may well be true, but I insist that I can choose for this to happen if I want to and not have anything else shrink.
If a two-cycle shrinks, it doesn't shrink if the overall volume shrinks.
Right.
It really has to be kind of a...
These are all independent moduli.
Self-dual, the two four, so it's...
And they're all independent moduli.
It doesn't have to shrink to zero for some...
Well, it doesn't have to shrink at all. I can freeze it, I claim.
Yeah.
By just choosing carefully the path
and not. So 20 comma 4 z symmetry of this theory,
right? Okay,
under which this particular
is dual to
is
a shrinking of a two cycle. Yeah.
Okay, and you're just picking the generic, quaternionic, the codimension 1 singularity.
Yeah. Okay. What he said.
Anything else is dual to this.
Yeah.
Or higher codimension.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Two questions.
If questions in the court of law are at last minute, you said.
Yeah. One is, so from the gauge theory point of view, this membrane coming in is like you've gone to the Coulomb branch of a big three-dimensional
gauge theory. Excellent.
Form gauge theory.
Yep.
And presumably the singularity is understood there as being like the Seibert-Witten negative metric.
Absolutely.
Which is a crude approximation of the gauge theory.
Yep.
And so the gravity solution is corrected up. Also, presumably,
say that again.
In the gauge theory, that singularity is a one loop artifact.
Yeah.
So here also, there's a correction to the metric.
Well, there in principle is some tone corrections, which are sadly suppressed at large n. So this singularity is not the naive thing you get perturbatively and then gets washed out by instantons and it turns into a Teer-Hitchin, etc.
Okay.
It's in fact, it's there at large n. Instanton,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Good.
I'm
not here to talk about the gauge theory dual. That's another talk which I can give next week if you wish, but I'd like to get on to the other story.
Just one other question, which is this fact that the singularity in K3 moduli space is a codimension, real codimension 4, came up before, and if you just choose a small theta angle here, You're saying the gravity solution has drastically changed, or you're saying that the theta angle flows away as you come in, so you still get a singularity?
So you're saying, so you're asking, if I did put in the theta angle, then of course I have to tune something else in order to get the enhanced gauge symmetry. And so the presence of theta angle, which seems mild from one point of view, is clearly doing something significant here.
Yeah, what's confusing is you have a one-dimensional flow, and you hit singularities at codimension 4. So generically, you wouldn't hit any singularities.
Right, because you would miss generically, right, okay.
You turn on the theta angle, you change the tension, and the tension doesn't hit zero.
Right, but...
So what happens?
That's what I'm asking.
Okay, well, I would say I don't know. I'd have to think about it. So it's obvious to you guys what the supergravity solution looks like?
No, but he's saying on general ground, Z-tractor mechanism will want to make something very light, and since it can be made in Maslow's, it'll make it Maslow's.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Yeah. Good old attractor mechanism. Okay. Okay. So I hadn't thought about that. So where were we? So, good. So the point is then, the inside is bad, let us simply throw it away. We excise it, and we replace it with something else. Okay? And the something else is the bit when talk on enhance-ons people usually take, there's a big sort of collective sort of sucking of air through the teeth, because the something else is simply flat space. Thank you. Good. Okay. And to a first approximation, that's not unreasonable, simply because what is producing the interesting geometry inside any solution of this sort is the presence of point-like sources. But I have just demonstrated for you that I failed to get point-like sources inside this radius, and so I don't expect to have anything non-trivial going on in the inside. That's sort of the glib argument, and it's good enough for what we want for our starting point here.
How do you know there is an inside? Maybe ordinary space-time description breaks down at that point?
That would be true if everything we could think of throwing in there hung up at that radius, but that is not the case.
What's the curvature?
The curvature invariants are not necessarily mild in this region, if that's what you're asking about.
The volume of K3 is
a
B star, right?
Yeah, the K3 is very small, and so things will be...
In the Einstein frame, you mean? This is spring frame.
Yeah, that's right.
So how does it look like in Einstein? Well, it is Einstein metric that is relevant.
Relevant to what?
So there is a string
abelian
projection, and then there is a
quantum. Okay. Well, either way, I'm not claiming anything about any corrections, simply because I don't have those things under control.
Well, you have calculated the curvature invariance, the square of the curvature tensor, and then the current
derivatives
and so on. So
yeah.
Is that blowing up or not?
They're not blowing up, but they're not small.
They're string scale.
Well, yeah. You can start not far from the point where your configuration is masterful, and then hence you have very large radius.
Say that again?
Just asymptotic conditions at infinity so that your D6 is very wide.
Are you saying you can make those invariants?
Let me think about that. I don't think I can.
Yes.
And it has no curvature, so
it will
be curvature.
But the 10 to 6 dimensional.
Right, in that sense, we don't expect anything to be well behaved, and that's the alpha prime corrections. Yeah, good.
There's sort of distributed sources inside, or is that?
The non-glib version of the argument is to be a little bit more careful about what's actually going on here, and then we actually see that indeed the brains are spreading out as monopole. Oh, good. So the membrane also should be regarded as a monopole of the U1, which isn't getting in, which is getting enhanced. Okay. And if you work it out, you'll see that indeed precisely the U1 that talks to the volume will be the thing which a rat D6 brain is a monopole of. And I mean a BPS monopole. Okay, and so in fact we know that as the Higgs valve goes to zero near the point of enhanced gauge symmetry, it's sort of meaningless to talk about the monopoles being massless anyway, being point-like anyway, they're also spreading out. So the picture you should have in mind, fitting with what Steve was suggesting, is that in fact not only is our friend becoming massless as it approaches here, but it's also smearing out. And so at the end of the day, the picture we have in mind is simply that there's a shell, the enhanced-on shell, made of smeared brains, which have all spread out to this radius, and inside, to a good approximation, is flat space.
What is the argument that the inside is just flat?
The argument is that I can put no sharp point-like sources in there generating this particular asymptotic, these particular asymptotic charges.
But you could put smeared sources.
You could put smeared sources inside, but...
It wouldn't be flat
in that. It depends a lot on the smear, how you smeared things. But I'm going to tell you precisely what the answer is.
You have to match the outside metric to the flat space.
And then that's what we're going to do today. Okay.
But also, in the spirit of what you said, if you threw something in that wasn't getting massless, then you're making a definite statement about how it's going to work for some.
Absolutely.
Inside.
Right.
And you can check that with some probes.
Well, you can probe it with other things with the same amount of supersymmetry, like a normal D2 brain, and it just doesn't care because it has nothing to do with being wrapped on this surface, so it'll just float inside.
And then does it see flat space? But does it see flat space or something else?
Well, you declare that it sees flat space to be consistent with what you said about all the other the rest of the theory.
Where did you declare?
The probe calculation you do for a D2 brain will see D6 brain out here, and then the D6 brains have stopped here, so it'll just see whatever's inside, and so the moduli space calculation for a D2 brain. In this region, we'll just see whatever a D2 brain sees when it probes flat space with no interesting sources, which is nothing. That's not inconsistent with anything I know.
So there's a gauge theory that has a non-trivial curve moduli space outside, and then inside.
Right. So the issue is what is the, okay. So you're asking me from the point of view of the gauge theory, what does that D2 brain mean? Yeah. Well, it sort of looks like a flavor in the gauge theory, modulo the fact that it's not big enough
So from the point of view of this probe, it goes through this wall.
Which probe?
The
D2.
The D2.
Right. Good.
On the book on the D2.
Right.
Yeah. And then it goes through this thing,
mm-hmm.
and it sees flat space.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a gauge theory whose moduli space is an interesting curved space, mm-hmm. and then it gets some enhanced, I guess, some flavor symmetry on this shell.
It's not flavor symmetry. That's not flavor symmetry. That's some addition. That's some global symmetry. Right. Okay. I claim the probe computation is, well, there's nothing mysterious about the probe computation. Getting the gauge theory right is puzzling simply because the gauge theory on the honest D2 brain has, in addition to being, it's some U1 gauge theory with naively NF flavors corresponding to the N of the rat B brains. Eight.
Mm-hmm. Then I find it a little bit hard to understand that because with eight superchargers, you know, you never hit a wall, all singularities.
No, it's
four. But it's not a wall.
Four superchargers.
It's not a wall.
Even with four superchargers, I still think you're in trouble.
But it's not a wall. It's not a wall.
What?
It's not a wall.
Well, but you have a region where you have curvature. We are a region where you have absolutely flat. I don't understand how that sort of compatible.
Right, well, it just moves over from one to the other. I don't
know. You want to rank, right?
No, but you can always go around.
It's a more
general
question. There's really a circle in modular space with endpoints on it. The same goes to infinity, looks like.
Right.
It's like the Douglas.
Okay.
At some leading orders in the end, you could squeeze.
Oh, I see. Well, my point is you can go around it. You can always go around.
It's very finite in this problem.
Okay. Are there any more questions? Okay. So, good. So let's try and actually unpack some of these statements from the point of view of doing. No, I said to a good approximation. I'm just doing a lot.
Right.
Okay.
there's a very simple example of this on the Coulomb branch where you can take the gradients and distribute it spherically. Again, see the difference in finite input.
I haven't done the analogous probe computation there, so I will not give an answer because I do not know what it is. Okay, so I did say in the limit in which we're working, the supergravity limit, in that approximation that we're putting flat space inside, which seems somewhat drastic, and yes, there are corrections in 1 over n, but I'm not going to talk about them here. And so what I'd like to do is just pretend that I'm a relativist for a moment and just ask whether it's consistent to do what I just outlined. Okay, so what I'd like to show you is that from a purely supergravity point of view, in fact, the Enhanson radius is a very nice radius. Okay, and so that's what we're going to do and warm up. So we're just going to approach this problem from that point of view. So we can then speculate about 1 over n later on, but I'm putting on my supergravity hat now. Okay, so let's do that. So what we need to do is to do a matching computation. We need to actually match the supergravity outside to what we claimed is on the inside, and check that it's consistent with everything else that we've said. Okay? And so first of all, it is traditional to do such a computation, given that I'm wearing my relativist hat, in Einstein frame. Right, so I go to Einstein frame in the usual way. String frame. Okay, and so here's my dilaton, and here's my, well, actually I don't need the string frame for a good while, so let me actually just okay, am I going to get okay. In fact, I will need those numbers, so let me actually make sure have them right. I shouldn't do fractions in public. Seven, three. Right, and then it repeats. Good. Okay, and I will at some point want to refer this just to G, refer to this as G mu nu, dx mu, dx nu for these parts, plus gij, dxi, dxj for the transverse parts, plus gab, dxb, dxa, dxb for the K3 part. Okay, that will make my my life simpler notationally later on. Okay, everything remains the same, so I will in fact, to make room, remove the stuff that you should bear it in mind, and as we need it, we will. Bring it back. So so what I'm told, if I go to Misner, Thorne and Wheeler or something like that, is that I should, so I'm cutting, let us not cut at, let us not make an incision at RE, let's make it at some as yet unspecified radius of incision, which I'll call RI. And so we make our incision there. So we need a normal, inward and outward pointing normal, which I'll call N. So that fellow appropriately normalized is simply that. Okay, and then I can rewrite the Einstein equation simply as a condition on what the stress tensor at the boundary should be. So let me rewrite that for you and urge you to actually my conventions plus and minus out and in corresponds to minus plus. Okay, so I need to compute the extrinsic curvature. So A and B will refer to all coordinates not including R. And this fellow so I apologize to the honest relativist who don't want to be reminded of all of this kindergarten stuff, but there it is. Okay, so so this is the thing then, this is the crucial thing, so it's the extrinsic curvature, and this is the essential thing out of which we will build a discontinuity tensor, which is a simply which is simply the way I've defined it, with the sign built into the definition of the normal, is simply the sum of these guys. Okay. Or if you like, the difference of the extrinsic curvatures on either side measured in a positive sense. Okay. And I don't think there's a constant of proportionality there. And then the stress tensor on the surface of incision will be correctly normalized as good. Okay, so I'll need to find this thing, compute its trace, and compute that object. Okay. S is the stress tensor.
Well, do we see the Israel junction formula?
Excuse me? Yes, yes.
Israel junction
formula. That's a surface stress.
Yeah, I think I said that.
Oh.
Yeah?
The metric about Gauss for any distribution of D6 planes, why can't you just put a D6 plane on a circle and find the metric?
Say that again?
So, the metric with the harmonic form. Works for any
gradient
distribution of
the D6
plane.
I mean, metric with the
homo.
Ah, good.
The metric you have there.
Yeah.
So why can't you just put it on? You end up with something which has D6 plane charge, the same D6 plane energy.
Good.
Why don't you just put the D6 planes there and find the metric?
I think what you're asking. Well, I think what you're asking is for me to generalize this whole discussion to find enhancements of arbitrary shape given by some harmonic function, which I haven't specified. Just saying it's harmonic, not...
You can find the harmonic function for the Dissig sprain.
Yes, right. Right. But that calculations exist with that or done. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not presenting that here today. Okay.
But to make sure I understand the non-relative language, what you're doing.
Okay.
This is basically going to be the stress tensor that comes from ND6 brain sitting at R equals R sub I.
Well, we hope so.
And so there's a check, which is...
There's a check.
...the tension of 6.
Absolutely. It's a non-trivial check.
Okay.
I hope you agree. And of course the answer is going to be, yes, it all works and everything works if we factor of 2 and minus sign, but it's good to do it just to make sure that we didn't make a mistake. Yeah. Any questions? Okay, so let's go ahead and do it. Okay, so the calculation is really nice and a lot of fun. So let me keep that. And okay, let me work. Okay, let me use this space here. Okay, because I want to keep the picture, I guess I should have drawn it a lot smaller. Okay, so if I go ahead and do this, I will find that, well, once you get used to doing this, it's sort of nice. You can see what happens if I write each gamma A, if I write gamma AB as an intermediate step for each part, you can see what happens. If you just run it through, you'll essentially get, G is G Newton. Let me remove the N so there's no confusion between Newton and the number of six planes. And you simply get 5 over 8 C6, no, C2 primed over Z, where primed means D by DR. That's the only non-trivial derivative we're computing here. Plus 3 over 8 Z2 primed over Z6 primed over Z6 by so mean G mu mu times G mu mu.
So this is an answer for the case when there is flat paper inside and then this geometry
good.
Outside.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just showing you some intermediate steps of the calculation so that you can reproduce them in the privacy of your own home. And this is times Gij. And then, well, we can all guess what happens for AB part. Actually, this is plus, and I'm running out of room. That's G, not 6. And this is 3/8 and minus 1/8. So you can see the pattern. Okay. So that's an intermediate step. Then I go ahead and compute the trace of this. Okay. Essentially, by just throwing in a G on each side, I'm just going to get some numbers multiplying these guys, which I then add. And you can see I'm going to get 3 from here, 2 from here, and 4 from here. So this thing is going to be adding those all up, I'm going to get something like, what is it, minus 15 plus 6 plus 12, it's minus 3 over 8, I may be double counting my 8s actually. Something like that. Okay, so we can go ahead then and form this thing. You can see the if I've done things right, okay, that's a plus, that's a plus. If I've done things right, you'll see, for example, something nice happen in the IJ directions with stress tensor G times the trace times the discontinuity tensor will exactly cancel, giving me zero. There. And then I have some other bits which I should go away and check, give you the right numbers. Okay, so that's essentially the calculation. The reason I went through it in such detail, yes, I was double counting my 8s. I've already absorbed them into the 16. I apologize.
Excuse me,
Cliff. Yes. Let me just finish this point. Let me just write these up so I don't. So I can we can discuss them. That's something else I forgot. Good. And that's zero, as I said, and this is 1/16 pi g newton. 1/√gRr, yes. I also forgot to normalize. Excuse me?
The GRR factor there is instead of the pi g, there's no pi g again.
Ah, good, right, yes. Okay, I'll remove that in a sec. Let me just write this up and then answer the question. C6 primed over Z6 dAb. And this is g mu nu. And yes, I was running ahead. And my pi g's don't come in until I define the stress tensor, of course, through Einstein's equations. So let me write this properly, and hope you all brought erasers for your pencils. Okay, you had a question?
It's a very silly question. The comma is derivative with respect to f squared.
The what?
Prime?
The
prime.
D by dr.
Sorry.
D by dr.
So by then, I would expect that there would be two primes, right?
Well, that would not be right. Well, you should argue with Israel. Right, it's just the extrinsic curvature is defined as I said, and Einstein's equations written in that form is given in terms of the extrinsic curvature.
Can I understand this as some kind of Bartle theorem in the presence of Grandmoll scale? In the absence of Grandmoll scale, there is a theorem that there is a unique solution to solution to Einstein equation, and from that you can show that if you have a scale, then inside we have a scale.
Oh, so now it goes from a crazy proposal to really obvious. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not participating in that conversation.
Oh, okay. Very good, very good.
So I can prove there is some kind of a generalization of Bartle's theorem where you can simply say that if you have...
That does not sound unreasonable, but... I guess... Okay.
You have a free sphere and you put charges.
Okay.
You don't get any...
And he's saying it all follows from Birkhoff's. Well,
I'm not saying that. Can I understand this as some kind of generalization of Birkhoff's theorem in the presence of Ramel-Ramel
field? Honest relativist has the floor.
An interesting question. I would say that I must be imposing some regularity condition because otherwise I can imagine I have some running for dilaton in the interior.
And in general, certainly, even in the planetary centrality, there are lots of black holes in the interior of this, which is the moment of the
planetary. Have you used the plan that you are using? Or in doing this at the Hansen radius, or does it work for anything?
No, I have not used that yet.
But you have to use it?
We will presently.
Oh, okay. So it will work only when you set the radius?
No. Well, what do you mean work? What it? What's it?
there is a picture that you have a flat space inside.
I mean, would you have that in quite any ideas?
No. But Einstein has told me to solve his equations, okay, as long as I put something with that stress tensor that I have computed at that shell, I have solved his equations.
Will the matching with these extensions work for any radius too?
That's what we're going to check. Okay? So, here we are. So we have a result. We're proposing an incision at any radius, and let us see whether it's consistent with that which we wish to suture the wound with. It's a good thing this isn't a lunchtime seminar.
We're sick ones.
I just thought of that one. Okay, so what we could do, just for fun, is we could plug in our Zs and we'll know everything. So let's plug them in and see what they are. Okay? So, first comment, this is zero. So this is saying that the shell has no stress at any radius, which is good because these are BPS objects and they shouldn't be having any interplay giving rise to stresses and all of that good stuff. So we get a gold star for that. I heard a...
So this should, on the right-hand side, you should have the discontinuity in the derivative, right?
This is the discontinuity.
This is the
jump. This is...
Yeah. It's delta function. Inside is flat space and nothing is changing.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're assuming inside. Okay.
Can I ask one more question about the parameters?
Yeah. Sure.
You're large N, but you're treating the six brain shell as infinitely thin.
Yeah.
So we're sort of a small g string N, is at least as far as those.
Well, as far as I'm doing supergravity.
Six brains are not sort of spreading out into a continent for a
pair. Well, I'm certainly not doing that, so my pedestrian answer is no. It's an infinitely thin shell, and I think that's okay to do in this strict supergravity regime that I'm working in.
The Gates theory, which is not really addressing the physics that Eva is asking about, which is that we can think of this as some large n limit of some harmonic function thing in the way that Gilson suggested. And the coordinates in which I work in the harmonic function are describe the individually six brains as points, even though they correspond to the throats of non-zero size.
But here you are not dealing with individual physics brains, right? You are actually assuming that in the past of this mention that you have any of them together.
But they're also spread out.
Have any of them spread out into a thin shell?
Oh, well, the way to see it is on the moduli space, if you code from outside, right? Just because instant corrections are suppressed, then the singularity is really a point-wise singularity.
That's also true, yes. The enhanceon is a sharp place at large n. That's true.
I'm a little confused about what's going on here. So it should be that given your interpretation that the enhanceon is at some particular radius, and you do the matching, it without flat space, it won't work everywhere except for when r is equal to the enhanceon radius. And that will turn out to be true, right?
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, we can all anticipate. Just forgive me. Let me for the folks at home. Let me go slowly. it sounded like you had a subsequent question. Okay. Oops. Okay. So let us just extract from this the tension. Right. Bunch of tensions and tension and a bunch of pressures. So let me extract the tension. Let me call it suggestively tau. It's as a function of our incision radius, and we can just plug in. Remember, r is now just a parameter, and we can just plug in everything. So I remind you, z2 is 1 minus R6, V star over V, R, and Z6 is 1 plus R6 over R, and R6 is in G string alpha prime to the half over 2. And we also need that our friend 16 pi G Newton is equal to 2 pi to the 7 alpha prime to the 4 G string squared. Right? So now we can compute everything. So let us do that. So if we do that, we get an answer. And the answer is, drum roll, N. Good. Well, let me not give you any intermediate steps. Let me just tell you the answer. It's tau 6 V minus tau 2. And I factored out an overall, this gives you the tension of everything smeared over the whole nine-dimensional thing. So I've taken out the volume factors coming from there to give the tension that we're looking for.
So could you call it tension? There are sort of two things you could be talking about. You're talking about the energy density of the shell, right?
Yeah.
Because there's not really any tension if you pull one of them out, is there?
Well, no, that's tension. That's always what tension means.
No, you can have a topological term and a kinetic term for fluctuations.
No, the pulling apart would be in the transverse directions. This is in the brain. So this is the regular deep brain tension. Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
There are two terms that you could have. There's a kinetic term for fluctuations, and then there's an energy term, the cosmological term.
Okay.
And if I understand, you're talking about the cosmological term.
Well, no, as far as I understand, I guess I don't know what you mean by cosmological term.
The picture is that you have this N brain, N BPS brain stuck on the circle, and they don't have any forces between them, right?
Right.
So there's
no forces between them. The fact that this is a brain with tension is this part. This is in the 0, 1, 2 directions. So I just mean tension, meaning tension.
Just the energy density.
Yeah. Sorry, you were probably asking me something very deep, and I apologize. Okay. Okay, so great. We recognize this happily as the result we wish. Okay, four. And so we see that, in fact, if we were to put, to cut our radius, thus declared our incision radius, we would have, no, I've said that wrongly. This is not, let me say this again. I got interrupted when I was saying this and I forgot where I was. What I meant to say was that this is the result in the large R limit. Right? So we're measuring the asymptotic tension of this thing and checking that we get the right result. That's what I wanted to say. More generally, we then get a result which I can write as something proportional, let me not put in all the numbers, to V of R minus V star. Okay. The point being that that tension, if the incision radius were chosen to be the enhanced-sum radius, our computation has indeed said that it is consistent to have what we said, a shell of zero tension living just at that radius. Okay? Which is what you're asking for. Okay.
There's also matching conditions for the dilaton and so on.
Yes. Yes, they do. Okay, so that's good. So let's ask a few more questions.
Isn't it maybe the punchline? I didn't have you get it.
The punchline is that we... The punchline is that precisely at the... I guess I should have written it. We have a shell of zero tension, oops, brains, which is where we came in.
Coming back to the question, is it consistent still to put, assume the existence of brain somewhere outside of
the yes.
existence
of the brain?
Yes. This is still a consistent solution with
right.
correct amount of tension.
Yes. Right.
So from that point of view, why do you have to assume that the brains are the excision thing? Really?
Why do I have to assume that?
Yeah. Because you took first place inside.
But why is RI equals RE preferred to RI equals
times
RE?
Yeah, so that was my question about quantum.
The point is that this is BPS, right? And so we're not going to get anything particularly, right? I mean, I can pull these guys apart and just leave them there.
Presumably there's one preferred right? solution. Which really resolves the singularity and string theory.
Well, I'm about to tell you further things we can find about this radius, which make it special.
I don't understand. So you're saying that the correct picture is that you get to the excision radius and then you have got space. But now you're saying that there are much other possibilities.
Well, yes, I can pull the brains apart.
Well,
we always knew that. The point is that below the excision radius, mm-hmm. we're going to run into trouble. We'll have a Poisson geometry. Mm-hmm. So we'd better take care of it. And so the minimal thing which Joe, Amanda, and I proposed was that that's the radius at which you'd better fix things. Okay? We'll see other reasons why that radius is interesting in a moment. Which are sourced appropriately by the brain. Yes.
So you see that? So
yes.
It's something which has no tension, but that source is the Ramanujan.
Good. This is Simon's favorite point. what's the best way to show it? The point is that it's not zero. The calculation you would do to compute the jump. Is the calculation where I just have, so what do I have? I have, so for the remote, well, for the remote Ramon bits, I don't have coupling to the tension there. So maybe I'm answering the wrong question, actually.
Sure, so you have a Ramon to the outside, right. space.
Okay.
You have a jump.
There's
an object to discharge under the Ramon.
Right, which are the brains.
Okay.
Right. But I was going to answer, I think, the wrong question, so perhaps I...
So,
yeah.
Yes, last one. So the fact that you can have RI to be any point, according to Ashok's context of Ashok's question, was that it still seems to be consistent with the possibility of having a generalized Barkov theorem.
Yes, I would imagine that is correct. Yes.
I think what you're saying is that from the point of view of this pure supergravity calculation, I can put the shell with flat space inside at any radius.
Mm-hmm.
And from the point of view of the world volume field theory, this should correspond to states on the Coulomb branch. That
mm-hmm.
does
mm-hmm.
What's special here is that there's a special radius, RE.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense to put the shell with radii smaller than
mm-hmm. I recall saying that, yes.
Yeah,
thank you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't run all the way down to R equals zero.
Okay.
The interesting thing is that supergravity seems to know that.
Yes. That's one of the points I will get to, particularly in the next calculation, which is that supergravity seems, despite the fact that it doesn't know about strings and what have you, it does know that our... this radius is special for lots of other reasons, and so that...
Can you formally put the brains at a smaller radius and have a negative tension source?
You could, but I don't know what that means.
So as far as the supergravity calculation goes, it doesn't...
They're just... Right?
Who's happy with things that violate the energy conditions, then yes, I'm not.
Right? But the result is here, and V will run below, and the sign will pop up. Okay.
Just a minute, when you go to the negative, the tension is really the absolute value of that. It's just that...
No, the tension is what you compute.
Suppose you ask, put a D6 brain back on a K3 of a very small volume. The tension of that object would be absolute value of it.
That's true.
That's not this.
But in supergravity, the tension is of the shell would really be negative.
Yeah, you cannot put this one inside. If you specify the asymptotic behavior.
Okay, so where are we? Ah, 15 minutes cookie time. I haven't even got to the interesting part yet. Okay. May I have that 15 minutes, sir?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Good. So of course, what we could do is just ask, well, what is, you know, I guess I was asked this in this way at Stanford, just how much, and this is of course, should be in quotes as you see, just how much repulsion do I cut out? You can decide what that means for your own purposes. What I'd like to show you also is that the enhance-on gives the answer all. So I'll tell you what precisely what I mean. The point is that I can also just ask, well, I have some supergravity solution. Forget about the enhance-on for now. I have some supergravity solution, and I take some particle, okay, and I just put it there. Okay, what happens to it? Okay, so you can do the usual computations. So I'll compute effective potential. For scattering in this geometry, you know, undergraduate scattering problem in repulsion geometry. Okay, so you can do the full story, you have conserved angular momentum, etc., you have a conserved energy. So you can do the standard computation and compute the effective potential. The geometry we first arrived at before the repulsion geometry, the entire thing, but now not pretending we didn't, right. Okay, so compute that, and just for fun, what are we looking for? Well, we're looking for turning points as usual. So let me just write down the important point is that the relevant bit, we can do the whole thing with impact parameters and all that good stuff. Let me not do that. Let me just put in the piece with zero impact parameter and imagine that I have some fellow in the geometry coming in scattering radially. And the point is that I'm looking for turning points in this geometry. And essentially, so look for turning points. No, not turning points. Look for turning point of the potential, not the same thing. Look for, what's that thing where the derivative vanishes? Minimum. not to be confused with turning points, meaning I'm scattering in and, right, good. I just want to put the thing at any place and see whether, right, and so the point is, as you can see, I'm going to get something like that. And the point is that the enhance-on radius is precisely there. Okay? GRR primed equals zero defines that, and if you put in what GRR primed is, which is, GRR is Z2R, Z6R, proportional to that, that's precisely where the enhance-on radius is. So that's another reason that the
So you're scattering the six grains?
No, I'm just saying a random particle. Any particle.
You're just saying
the graph cutting zero at the presumed would be a season. Sorry,
so
not the repulsion radius.
Excuse me.
Is the repulsion radius
where
the zero?
Yes. No. Repulsion radius is here. Actually, right. This is good. Repulsion is where Z2 goes to zero, yes?
So this doesn't make a case for cutting out the region inside or anything, right?
No, it just simply is supporting evidence that that's an interesting radius at supergravity. Remember, I put on my relativist hat. We know from string theory that it all happens. I'm just wearing my relativist hat and saying, here are various signs that supergravity knows about. The reason I'm doing this is not to waste your time, but also
why is it special?
Sir?
Why is the minimum is special?
Why is
Why is the minimum thicker?
Because if I put the particle anywhere else, the geometry would be repulsive. That's why it was called the repulson in the first place.
But you were telling us supergravity is clever enough to rule the enhancement rings. That's why I asked the question.
Excuse me?
You or Simon made the claim that supergravity is clever enough to know about the enhancement radius.
He doesn't know why that radius is special, but happily that radius is special in the supergravity so that I can build all of this stringy stuff on top of it.
But supergravity doesn't see itself breaking down.
No, that's true. No, absolutely.
No, you're just saying that if your Xi is there,
the Xi is there. Any particle
energy will always be attractive.
Yeah, right. which is sort of interesting.
It's
attractive, like any good, healthy, gravitating system ought to be.
It is breaking down the enhancement radius in an obvious way, at least if we believe the story we put flat space inside. If I probe...
No, but we put that in using stringy intuition, so that's not fair.
If I resolve the enhancement geometry with simple probes, like particles, then I think that their motion is described by string theory as well approximated by their motion is described by supergravity in this background.
Well, that's true, but that's after we've modified it using stringy intuition.
Is it obviously breaking down because there are curvatures and strings
We wouldn't say that about many solutions in that. I mean, yeah, it's obviously in an obvious sense it's breaking down for that reason, but that's not what we're getting. The repulsion is an unusual feature.
Well, that's the repulsion if there are string scale curvatures involved.
Wait, is that necessarily true that you have string scale curvature if you take a large shell and push it past this radius?
I think that's the
case.
I have a question about that, which is the following. It's true that the K3 is string scale, but normally our internal spaces are string scale, and normally we don't worry about that.
For some purposes, you use six-dimensional supergravity where the entire internal geometry becomes the modulus.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as the modulus has a small gradient, it doesn't matter that it's the modulus of a small scale.
Right. As the K3 goes through a string scale volume, aren't there gradients that are also large?
No, there need not.
Aren't there singularities in the effect of action indicating that the six range is coming down?
No, because it's just the supergravity fields don't know that radius is special, so the mm-hmm. does not come up. And from the point of view of the K3 modulus, that's a smooth point.
Mm-hmm.
What about the coliform as a counter example? Right? The supergravity.
Yeah, that's not like
it's not like that. It's not. Even though you have a light wrapped people in the game. For instance, the gauge fields must know if you can do their gauge coupling. The thing is, at the radius, you have to add in some extra fields.
Yes.
So there are divergences if you don't have them.
But the supergravity by itself doesn't tell you that those fields are needed.
And no signs of
strength. But the gauge coupling surely do.
Which is not the gauge coupling.
You want.
No, actually, it's an N equals 4 theory, so maybe the
It's an F to the 4th term. It's not F squared, it's an F to the 4th term.
It's just
power law divergent. And the compound is an F squared to the
4th term. I mean, you are having charged fields that are
becoming lying
like.
It's a 4-point diagram with a charged field running the loop.
That's right.
That is singular, and it's definitely singular. Which is the analog of the
I mean, you can say that on one hand that the effective field theory is breaking down, on the other hand, there's no sign of that breakdown in the effective field theory.
Right. There are
That's what I was saying, but anybody was saying that to the fourth term?
Yeah.
Back to regular programming? Okay. So, so that's another observation. One of the reasons I'm doing this is not just as an exercise, although I do think it is an interesting exercise, but also because it would be nice to apply this technique to situations where we don't have all of these flags being waved at us. Okay, but sometimes we won't have all of them, and so it may be useful to learn as much as we can about this example from supergravity, from strings, all of that, so that we then have a nice toolbox. So in that spirit, assuming I've covered all the points I wanted to correspond to talk about the extremal case, I was then going to talk about a non-extremal generalization of this geometry and to do some cutting and pasting there and try and uncover an interesting story.
Why it works?
Why
the Hanson radius is special and gravity is a one-fourth unique?
I don't know why.
I mean, what
mine is not to reason why. Mine is just to do it. Yeah. I don't know what you mean by why in any deep sense.
I think you're comprehending that, so you're presented very good circumstantial evidence.
That's all I claim to have done.
It wasn't.
We know that the full theory is string theory. Okay? And, yes?
I'm sorry. Answer his question.
Okay. Maybe you have a better answer.
Oh, no. I guess a related question.
Maybe you have a better question.
I guess my question is sort of what has worked? We sort of previously argued that since they were from the six-dimensional point of view, charged particles becoming massless as you approach the Hanson radius, so that one would expect that the six-dimensional supergravity description, which did not contain them, was breaking down. Okay, have we now? Is the claim now that we've patched things up so that the six-dimensional supergravity description is now good and you can sail past in Hanson radius? Or what? I mean, what have we...
The claim is that this is the geometry in which we should begin discussing the physics that we may wish to discuss about this, whether it be gauge gravity duals or what have you.
This intuition about getting light particles is a little misleading because the K3 isn't sitting at this radius over all points in our
system. That's right.
And even when it goes through that radius, it's varying. So there's no reason to think that you really have to throw out 60 supergravity ad stuff.
Smooth it out near that point and throw away the interior.
Yeah, and throw away the interior.
The whole interior. That's very drastic.
But what we're doing is putting
the
shell out that point.
Yeah.
But at that point.
But
you do have to smooth it out a little bit.
Yeah, sure, of course.
How big is the sphere?
Oh, man. That's an independent.
It goes like N. Yeah. Do you want other numbers?
Yeah.
The question is also the thickness.
And slow with variation as you go.
Oh, by big he meant not the radius, the size.
The thickness is important.
Well, the thickness in this approximation is zero.
So the question is.
Thickness is one of the n.
But okay, 1 over n. It's 0 and then 1 over n corrections. Okay, 1 over n is better. Okay. Yep.
Yeah, about the six-dimensional supergravity, wouldn't that be another billion supergravity?
In the interior? Well, in the interior, yes. If I wanted to continue studying supergravity, then I have to write some sort of Higgs model coupled. Sorry? Well, yes, but they have masses outside. I'm sorry, I'm unable to hear you.
Is it reasonable to try to couple supergravity to non-abelian gauge fields?
People do it.
I mean, try to find the exact solution.
No, it's reasonable, and I know of people working on this, that there is currently not an exact answer, but it would be nice to have one.
But I mean, one could do things like traditional Yang-Mills theory, dual Yang-Mills instanton, and try to take into account gravitational background by coupling that to a twice-dimensional gravity.
Yeah, and
you know, it's a perfectly reasonable thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, people write down monopole solutions to gravity, for example.
Yeah. Not only monopoles going to the gravity, but also non-abelian situations as well. Yes. But let me refer you to the work of Eric Weinberg and collaborators. Hello? Okay. So, so now the interesting part begins, because now we go into the unknown. Sadly, it's 3 o'clock. I'm very happy to continue.
Can you cover the
unknown? The unknown is very big, so let me at least present an interesting solution to which we may submit some of this intuition. And good. Okay. So, you may, for whatever reasons to do with the dual gauge theory, or other reasons, attempt to find what would be, what we would have guessed would have been the finite temperature version of this solution. And we would have guessed it with the correct sign in the D6, D2 geometry. You would guess that putting in the usual non-extremality parameter would then give you the finite temperature story. So look for that solution. So one attempts then to find such a solution, and the answer is that you can find a solution which is analogous to that situation, but the minus sign makes a huge amount of difference. So let me tell you what the answer is, and then I will just list some things. So in fact, let me then invent some new notation, which should remind you of the sorts of notation that people So in fact, we had a slightly wrong, with a sign wrong version of this in our paper with Joe in the decoupling limit. And this is the correct sign in the fully, the ones in all the harmonic functions. Something similar. Okay, what is R0? R0 is the non-extremality parameter, and it appears in the metric in the place that you would expect it to, which is that in front of dt squared, I have this and everything else, and in front of dr squared, I have the inverse of this. Okay? So you play around. It is not an obvious, in some sense, before the fact, analog of the V2D6 solution. The sign filters through in various places, which you should be careful about. Okay, so R0 is some additional parameter. We have some geometry which looks rather like the same sort of orientations that we had before, but things are different. And so the question is, of course, what can we apply, given that we are no longer BPS? What are the things that we learned can we apply? I'm just going to put up the, okay, well, maybe I'll just decorate. This gets modified to that. Okay, and, well, instead of me writing the whole solution again, just put these back in the same places. Okay, alpha 2 and alpha 6 will appear in the expressions for C3 and C7 in such a way that the asymptotic charge doesn't change. But other than that, the solution is structurally the same. Okay, so now this is a perfect example of what I was saying before. We don't have all of the nice supersymmetry observations to help us. So we should be a bit more careful. And so using some of our excision intuition based on some of the supergravity calculations, we can proceed. Okay, so I think that I won't get to a point where I can tell you the full story, but some of the story is, of course, that there is a repulse on singularity, of course. Okay. There's also a horizon set by R naught. However, the horizon happens. There is no way you can tune this geometry to get the horizon outside the repulsion geometry, surprisingly. So one should be careful about going around and calling this a finite temperature deformation of the solution. Okay? So then there are a number of interesting radii. There's the radius at which the supergravity, if you were to make the incision there and cut out the interior, would be entirely attractive. Okay, R subscript D, if you like. And then there's the thing where K3 goes to the special stringy value, which is RE. And I've drawn them like this without loss of generality. They never
swap. So you're in your early, for example, the last two
were
the same.
Yes, yes, yes. There's also the radius at which GRR primed goes to zero. That's yet a different radius, which lives somewhere in there. Okay. So these are all different.
What is RE again?
This is where you excise all of the repulsiveness. Right. The minimum of the potential for massive objects just sitting in the geometry.
But RE is all bigger than RE.
But good. Yeah. Right.
And if a massive object will not charge.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I just did a simple calculation, very simple minor computation. Yeah.
So if horizon is always inside of the existing radius, how do you determine the temperature to
that? Precisely. Well,
as I understand, temperature is normally determined by requiring the regularity of the
Yes. 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 But as I said, I was being agnostic about whether this thing should be interpreted as finite temperature because the horizon is inside the region that I will always cut out.
So it's not clear whether this is the finite temperature.
Bingo.
And if you went to four dimensions, this would be a black hole with too few charges to have a finite horizon area. Is that right? There's not enough.
If I were,
you could view this whole thing as a 4D black hole. It's just going to
have a finite. Ah.
And then it's just one with too few charges to have a finite horizon area.
He says that I can't choose the parameters so that R naught is outside. In particular, I can take this solution. In terms of the Lagrangian fields off,
right.
And it's still a bad form. It's still singular. The singularity is really essentially because of this non-trivial dependence.
So it has nothing to do with charge at all.
The periodicity of T is once you've excised the...
Once you've excised the periodicity of T is whatever it can be. So it'd be like doing Euclidean computation in flat space. I mean, you can't give it a definite temperature. The temperature is arbitrary. Good. Well, that's the answer.
But
yes.
There has to be another family of solutions.
Yes.
Which go over just into the
whatever black, whatever.
It would be nice, and this isn't it.
And there is no
we thought this was, but it seems. But well, I'm running ahead of things because at some point we're going to cut out this geometry, okay, and put something else inside. Perhaps what we put inside may give us a temperature. Perhaps not. So.
This solution has lots of modeling. You can consider non-spherical.
That's right.
So, especially with large depth, this is a huge modeling space.
Right.
So if you want to study temperature dependence, and this modeling is able on supergravity, unlike, say, modeling for
right.
the entire system. So it would be considering the ensemble of solutions.
That's all true.
If you're doing temperature.
Good.
We should be non-spherical.
I don't see. I mean, we know why is non-sphericalness essential for studying finite temperature. We know of many examples.
Well, because the other solutions are non-spherical. You study only the solution which has spherical symmetry.
Sure. Right.
There are many others which are non-spherical.
Right. There's a whole moduli space.
So perhaps when you average something, I don't know how to average for example.
No, there are many things you can do in an analogy to what we already know about simple brain solutions.
Wouldn't it be natural just to put the horizon, you can make R naught equal to RE?
No.
Which is what you would like.
It would have been nice, right? Or at least outside our repulsion, right? Because then you could have imagined that. Well, there are lots of things you can imagine given the data I would have extracted about the solution had we the time. But the point is that with it being behind the repulsion for all choices, you have to look for another solution. But this is an interesting solution anyway, and you can play various games. So let me just summarize. You can play various games.
Are you going to discuss what is going to put inside of this an existing radius?
To finish the sentence, you can play various games and put various things inside.
Oh,
okay. Right? And the various things you can put inside, well, we have to be careful. But now we can just pretend we're relativists and see what we get, okay? Given that we don't have many of the things we'd like to guide us. So you could, for example, again, cut out and put fat space in the interior.
Can you?
Yes.
Well, but you have more extreme solution, right? So that means that we have more mass than charge.
The matching condition will. You're worried. Sorry, what are you worried about?
I'm worried about matching condition for the metric versus matching condition for the Ramon-Ramon field.
Mm-hmm. But the Ramon-Ramon field still sources exactly the same amount of asymptotic charge.
Right, but you have more mass because.
But we have more mass, and indeed, so you're worried that I don't get that amount of mass?
Yeah, because.
Well, that's wrong. You do.
You do?
Yes.
Okay, but just to ask the question another way, in the previous case, the matching worked at any radius.
Right.
Here, that's.
Right, there are all kinds of things we can now study. There's also a probe calculation I can do in astrometry, which I can show you. So the probes are also seen.
Okay, so that matching condition doesn't work at our radii, but it does work at our equals.
The matching condition, well, be careful about what you mean by work. The matching condition simply says that if you choose to have some interior space, some exterior space, okay, you will define an energy momentum tensor at that shell, provided you go to the hardware store and build the appropriate thing with that energy momentum tensor. That is a solution.
You might then ask whether it matches what you expect.
But right, that's the point. That's the point.
That's what I mean. Right. Does it agree with what you expect from 6?
Well, the point is that at this stage it isn't clear what the interpretation of this parameter is. So we don't know what we're matching to. Are we matching to temperature? Or are we matching maybe to some non-BPS monopole solution
No, I don't understand that. I thought program is well formulated. You have flat space inside, outside you have this metric. You use Israel junction formula and the energy momentum tensor and charge distribution around the shell.
Right, and then you go home if you wish.
You have a reasonable theory which does that.
Well, yes, okay. But you're just going to get some. You're going to get some answer with some tensions and pressures, and you can imagine making all kinds of stuff.
So you can say M greater than Q.
For example.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, and then you have to say.
But this is what I'm saying. But without knowing what precisely R0 should be as a deformation parameter, I have a number of choices. And all I'm doing is reporting on those choices to you.
Since this is not BPS anymore, won't there be instability?
That's another thing one would have to worry about. It may be that the whole solution is unstable. Yeah. It's a complicated calculation to do.
What you do is you get some shell stress energy, and mm-hmm. you want to ask me, is that reasonable?
Yeah.
Well, tell me what reasonable means.
Well, small fluctuation.
If I'm putting flat space inside, then I'm intuitively I'm putting the extra energy on the shell, and so reasonable mm-hmm. no longer means it has to agree with the BPS D6 brain.
Right. Because we don't know what the non-BPS.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's not a very strong constraint. In fact, that is satisfying.
Well, reasonable means I can build it out of known sources.
Yeah. Well, we're all agreed on that. And what I'm trying to tell you is that the answer that we get is not unreasonable with many with many things with that charge.
I mean, no right? force just means. Without this extreme with excitation.
Right. Yeah. But what is the nature of those excitations?
The point at temperature, yeah. You didn't quite get that melting.
Right. What is the nature of the excitation? How did it come about?
Lots of excitations, I guess.
Right.
Right.
Right. And they'll all give you the right sorts of pressures and tensions. But the point is that we're going into the... Right.
Is it also possible to have just a standard grain, a BPS grain, wrapping on it, and put Schwarzschild solution inside of it?
That was the other option I was about to tell you about.
Therefore, you can get finite temperature.
So the answer is that you can also put the Schwarzschild solution inside.
Yeah.
instead of flat space, and then that will define a temperature. And then there's another interesting computation you can do, which is difficult, which is that you can see, you can ask about the equilibrium conditions for this shell of brains with that stress tensor you've deduced, and the Schwarzschild black hole. Again, the equations you get are not unreasonable with some interpretation. It would be nice to be able to know more about describing energy stress tensors of non-trivially interacting deep brain systems to see whether we can get exactly all the numbers. But the point is that we're getting something physical, and we don't have enough data to pin down what it is.
Yeah, because having DTS brain sounds like most minimal thing you do, and having Schwarzschild stress naturally gives you temperature. So
this is all true.
This will not be stable.
Sorry?
No, it's only one mistake.
It'll fall into the
black hole. Why would that be stable if you have this is not a non-supersymmetric situation. Mm-hmm. Some excited shell of brain.
Well, it surely depends on the nature of the stress tensor.
Right, I'm just asking intuitively. It sounds very surprising you make a stable shell.
But there ought to be a certain unstable solution. It may not be that.
Well,
you think the shell
either
want to expand or
collapse?
Well, it depends.
There has to be a stable solution to the finite temperature gauge theory, right?
Perhaps. Actually, one of the things we first did when we wrote down the slightly wrong signed version of this solution in the paper of Joe, but the sign isn't really crucial to the conclusions, is that if you did try and interpret this as some gravity dual of the finite temperature gauge theory, the range of parameters at which that horizon is visible outside the enhancement, if you like, it takes you well outside the regime where the gauge theory, where you've done the decoupling limit to the gauge theory. And so it's not clear that the finite temperature gauge theory description has anything to do with horizons. If you remember the story that we tried to map out when we were trying to see whether we could nonetheless find a gauge gravity dual of this wrapped system, we found that we could map out all the various parts of energy space where there were candidate duals which we could rule out, and there was a narrow window where we couldn't rule anything out except, well, we couldn't rule anything in uniquely, but we could definitely say that if it was a solution with a horizon, you wouldn't stay in that narrow window. And so there's some other dual description of the gauge at finite temperature, and it's not this.
In this solution, R naught can be negative, but I don't say anything bad happened.
It could be negative, I suppose. The ADM mass will indeed, yes, that's right. So the ADM mass, so the analog of this computation will give you an additional term with R0 here and some alphas here, okay? And in the limit, so this is the tension taken all the way out, and in fact, flipping the sign will give you something nonsensical in the asymptotic tension. ADM mass. Well, it would make it negative.
The total mass?
Yes.
Well, it's not large enough to make it far enough. It would actually make the ADM mass negative.
Okay, but you can make it
very small. Well, then it will just not satisfy the BPS bound. And I have a solution given asymptotics. I can read off the ADM mass.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
I can calculate
it. You can calculate the mass to charge ratio, for example.
And
that will go right. That will claim that there's a stable solution which has a lower mass than the BPS bound.
Well, I don't have a very general question.
Excellent.
If I understand this, you're saying that there's a bad singularity at the repulsion radius,
mm-hmm.
and even in the previous case, there's an enhancement radius that is larger.
Mm-hmm.
And by tuning V at infinity, I guess you can make RE much bigger than R repulsion.
Yes.
Now you're saying you cut out a sphere at RE
mm-hmm.
and replace it with flat.
Mm-hmm.
What confuses me is you think a priori there could be many things sort of close to R repulsion at that scale that give you microscopically different singularities, but which look like R, you know, which have the K3 at the same volume at R enhanced on. And they must have slightly different resolutions than they have to be.
You have to be clear about what you mean by microscopically different.
What I mean is, you're cutting out the...
So even this is even in the supersymmetric case, so let's forget... So, right, yeah. And you're saying that...
Couldn't there be many solutions which look like the solution at RE, but which differ in the details of the singularity in RE pulsion? And shouldn't they have different resolutions? They're not all just flat space inside this sphere.
I'm not sure how to answer that question. Let me not say yes or no or maybe because I'm not really sure I understand fully the question.
Okay,
sorry.
Can you be more explicit about your intuition about what's going to be different?
There's a locality question. You can make RE much bigger than RE pulsion.
Right.
And you're excising a ball of size RE.
Right.
So presumably the gravity solution knows around RE that it needs to change. But this is a huge radius, and the real singularity you're worried about is this tiny thing inside of it.
Well,
couldn't there be details
of that singularity? Well, let us know that the geometry is repulsive as soon as you go inside RE, and so even from the point of view...
Not true in this case.
Well, he wasn't talking about this case.
I think he was.
No, he wasn't. He said, let's restrict to the extremal case.
I'm happy to do either. Well, what confuses me is the disparity of scales. Why aren't there many different possible singularities that look the same out at this big scale?
Okay, well, let's find one, and then let's try and excise it.
Aren't those all accounted for by a ring of six planes at RE?
What you're saying is there are many different resolutions of the singularity, and... One is to glue in flat space with a certain stress point.
No, I'm just saying it seems like that information is on the ring.
For example, it can be a Coulomb ring. This is what happens in the Coulomb branch.
Rings.
Rings. You can have. That doesn't specify what goes on inside.
If you want to discuss other examples of the enhancement mechanism where there's much more complicated stuff going on, we can do that. But I'm saying for these asymptotic charges, this nice, clean, pure example, I'm finding it difficult to imagine what you're asking. But
we should let Clifford finish before the biophysicists eat all our cookies.
Well, it's not. Yeah, I think I've said all the important points. Let me not conclude. I'm not going to conclude anything grand. I just wanted to exhibit some interesting calculations to bolster things we already know and which may help us learn about slightly more complicated things.